From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this TGIF Friday. That's right, it is November 4th, 2016, and we plan on rocking out the end of the week with a fantastic hour of sports talk for you all. If you want to be a part of today's Current Sports, all you got to do is pick up that phone and dial 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. On today's show, we will talk about the Big Ten deciding to have Friday night games beginning next season. Yeah, that topic is ruffling a lot of feathers in the world of high school football. We will tell you why. We will also provide a preview of the Michigan State and Illinois football game that will take place tomorrow afternoon. Can Michigan State stop the losing streak? That's the big question. We will also preview the upcoming weekend that is for Michigan State soccer, as the men's soccer team will host its very first ever Big Ten tournament game at DeMartin Stadium, as they invite the Penn State Nittany Lions to the his house. Brooks Lambeer, Midwest Regional Scout for the Portland Timbers, will be in the house for that game, and he will preview that for us. And then later on the back end of the show, we will play a pretty cool story brought to you by our very own Kevin Lavery that centers on the new turf that has been installed at Cooley Law School Stadium, home of the Lansing Lugnuts. That and so much more. I already shouted out the number, 517-355-WKAR. You can also weigh in via social media at facebook.com/currentsports, or even tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports. And we also will be giving away a pair of tickets to check out the MSU women's basketball team as they will open up the year on Sunday, exhibition play. So you'll find out how you can win those tickets in just a second. But hey, you know how we start this party. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. All right, the second round of high school football playoffs starts tonight. In Division III, Mason at DeWitt. DeWitt's play caller, Will Nagel, has thrown for 1,028 yards and 13 TDs on 46 completions. In D4, Sexton at Lakewood. Sexton head coach and Lansing native Dan Bogan, get this, became the winningest football coach in school history. Quote, I told them this year that they're not the most talented team I've had, no doubt, that they are hard workers and they have some talent and they are understanding that they have the ability to be playmakers and game changers. That's spreading among them. So again, Sexton at Lakewood. Love that quote from Coach Bogan as well. All right, in Division 4, you have Escanaba at Alma, 1 p.m. Saturday. Alma's running back, Anthony Hum. I like that last name. That's a pretty cool sports name. Hum, humming along. He has totaled 834 yards and 9 TDs on the ground. In D5, Grand Rapids West Catholic at Portland. D5 also, Flint Powers at Corunna. Corunna features two backs in the top of the mid-Michigan area. Owen Walter, David Dumont, who have combined for 1,328 yards, 16 TDs. Also in D5, Muskegon Oak Ridge at Ithaca, 1 p.m. on Saturday. D7, Sagatuck at Pawamo, Westphalia, also 1 p.m. on Saturday. So a lot of Saturday games upcoming for a few of our local teams this weekend. The Wolverine basketball team will finally take the hardwood tonight for their first exhibition against Armstrong State at 7 p.m. In the fall of 2014, Armstrong State's head coach left the program on move-in day. The university, in a panic to find a new coach, received the best tip they could ever ask for. Former Michigan star Cassie Russell was actually living near the Savannah, Georgia campus, and they asked to help him out, to help out with some coaching duties. Now, the only Wolverine to ever have his number retired has assisted Armstrong State since, and is the primary reason the two teams will face off. Russell had this to say about taking on his alma mater, quote, I've never coached against Michigan. I've never done anything against Michigan. I've played for Michigan. Well, that all changes tonight. 7 p.m., the Michigan Wolverines begin its unofficial year against Armstrong State. 7 p.m., that should be a fun game. The MSU hockey team is back in action tonight at Mount Ice Arena as they take on Michigan Tech at 7:05 p.m. Last Friday, the Spartans got their first win of the year as they beat Princeton 6-2. The last five meetings between the Spartans and Huskies have gone to overtime, with Michigan Tech winning the last meeting 3-2 in the GLI semifinals at the Joe. Now, this is the first time in MSU history that the Spartans have gone to OT with an opponent in five consecutive meetings. Of those five games, the Spartans are 0-3-2. You can watch the game on BTN to go or listen to the Spartan Sports Network, WJIM 1240 AM. The number 16 Michigan State volleyball team brings a four-game homestand to Jenison Fieldhouse versus Northwestern tonight and tomorrow versus Illinois. Both games will start at 6:30 p.m. The Spartans take on Purdue next Wednesday and Michigan next Saturday. Both of those games start at 7 p.m. MSU is riding a two-match win streak, 19-5 on the year, their best start through 20 games since 1998 when they went 20-4. This will be the only time MSU will face Northwestern this season, while Illinois won their first meeting 3-0 in early October. MSU sits fifth in the Big Ten Conference at 8-4. The Detroit Tigers, what offseason? That's right, the Tigers wasted no time making their first move, trading Cameron Maben to the Los Angeles Angels for minor league pitcher Victor Alcantara. Now the Angels will pick up Maben's $9 million option as the Tigers try to shed payroll. Alcantara, 23 years old, will become the Tigers' 23rd best prospect, and the plan is to harness his 100-mile-per-hour fastball and use him as a bullpen piece in the coming years. The Tigers also exercise Francisco Rodriguez's, that's right, K-Rod, his $6 million option for 2017. K-Rod had 44 saves and 49 tries, good enough to put him at second in the American League. It has been a roller coaster of a year so far for the Detroit Red Wings. They started off the season dropping their first two games, then won six in a row, and are now on a three-game losing streak. The Wings defenseman Nicholas Cronwall is expected to have his season debut tonight. He has been on IR for an injured knee. All eyes will be on youngster Andreas Anthonisiou after head coach Jeff Blashill called out his effort after the Flyers game on Wednesday. The Wings are back in action tonight as they host Winnipeg at 7:30 p.m.
I know you guys kind of had an idea of what it might be like. Does this surpass it?
Big time. I mean, wow. This city's unbelievable. Just look at it. Yeah, the words can't describe it.
Awesome. All right, well, hey, enjoy it. I want you to keep looking forward here. Have a good time.
Yeah, let's party, baby. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Yeah, folks, the Chicago Cubs parade is underway in the Chi, and if you're watching the live stream, good luck trying to find the pavement. As the Cubs faithful fill the sidewalks and streets along Michigan Avenue, nearly twice the city of Chicago's population is expected to attend the Cubs World Series parade. Fans have knocked down fences, and the Chicago River has been dyed blue, a championship celebration 108 years in the making. Despite three locations to view the parade, pictures show that fans literally cannot move. And I know a few who are right in that parade right now, and it's nuts. It's insane right now, folks. All right, moving along, the Atlanta Falcons beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last night, 43-28. Matty Ice continued his unbelievable form. Ryan, that's right, Matt Ryan, completed 25 of 34 passes for 344 yards and four touchdowns. The Falcons have one of the most dangerous offenses in the league this year, as they have the NFL's leading receiver, Julio Jones. Last night, Jones had eight catches, 111 yards, and a TD, bringing his season total to 970 yards. Bucks receiver Mike Evans had 10 catches for 150 yards and two TDs, and Jameis Winston threw for 261 yards and three touchdowns. Both Evans and Winston finished the game on the sideline as Evans was being evaluated for a possible concussion, and Winston limped off while trying to score on a two-point conversion. And last but not least, disturbing news here. The Harvard men's soccer team will be suspended for the remainder of the year following an investigation that found a history of offensive scouting reports done by the team. The reports evaluated freshman women's soccer players on their looks and sex appeal, with number scored and descriptions, according to a Harvard Crimson report that found such a document from 2012. The reason for suspension was that the incident was not isolated to the 2012 year, according to Harvard president Drew Faust. All right, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Let's start the show.
You saw the news yesterday. Starting next year, the Big Ten will allow games to be played on Friday nights. Six games in total. Three played in non-conference action in September, three played in conference play in October. Larger stadiums won't host these Friday night games due to traffic concerns, and Michigan has already said they won't participate as the home or the road team. Let me go big picture in general, overall. How big a deal is this news?
It's a big deal because it helps finance most of the intercollegiate athletic departments in the Big Ten. We're going to go from $26 million per school to somewhere in $40 million. And I can't imagine that part of the reason that the TV partners are paying so much is in the discussions, the subject of Friday night games came up. So I think it's a big deal. I think it helps all of our universities, all our athletic departments.
It's only six Fridays, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not every Friday, so it's only six. So. That's not a lot, and as Jerry said, it's going to fund all those departments, which, hey, you need it.
Yeah, and that is how we start this afternoon's current sports. Before we begin, as I stated at the top of the hour, happy, happy Friday. You have made it. The weekend is almost here. Boy, oh boy, this week has flown by. Flown by. We've got a great show in store for all of you out there. Brooks Lambier will join us later on in the show. He is a Midwest Regional Scout for the Portland Timbers who is going to preview the Michigan State men's soccer game, as that program will host its first ever Big Ten tourney game when they welcome the Penn State Nittany Lions to DeMartin Stadium on Sunday afternoon. Big, 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 big game. Big game. Big Ten tourney time, folks. This is when it starts getting really serious. So Brooks will be in town actually scouting for that game. He's going to preview it for us. Looking forward to that. We will also preview, yes, we have to do it, the Michigan State football game against Illinois on the road. Spartans losers of a six straight. We'll chat about that. And we'll have a pretty cool feature from our very own Kevin Lavery, as he was out at Cooley Law School Stadium yesterday checking out the new turf that is being installed for the Lansing Lugnuts. That and more. If you want to be a part of the show, you know that number. By now, many of you out there probably have it on speed dial, all right? 517-355-WKAR. 517-355-9527. I want to start with what you just heard mixed in with that bite from the SOS band. The Big Ten Network really dived into it, and many publications have been chatting about it. Many radio shows have been talking about it. We've yet to get to it, but I want to sound off on it today, seeing as though today is, of course, week two of local high school playoff action. I riddled down a few games in our quick hit headliners, a few local teams who are still in the running for a state championship matchup. The Big Ten and the NCAA, in my opinion, folks, and I'm pretty sure these thoughts have been echoed multiple times from many of our listeners out there, but this is just a classic example of the NCAA and the Big Ten flexing its muscle and showing just complete arrogance at the end of the day. This is exactly what this move is about. Again, folks, if you have not heard, Big Ten football is coming to Friday nights in 2017 and beyond, which makes no sense to me. The conference's new TV contract, which begins next season, will include a package of 6 Friday night games. News was first reported by the Chicago Tribune, then later announced officially by the Big Ten Conference. Now, the Friday night games will be limited to September and October, won't include every team, actually schools with huge stadiums such as Penn State, Ohio State, you know, so on and so forth, won't be asked to host them. I don't know what that number is when you say huge stadiums. I don't know where that cap is, but Michigan, if you're wondering, has declined to participate in the Friday night games at home or on the road. That's what Big Ten commish Jim Delaney told the Chicago Tribune. And when it comes to MSU, they said they only want to participate if it's around Labor Day weekend. Because what happens that weekend, right? Usually don't have high school football on Friday nights. Those games, if they do take place, usually happen on Saturdays. So it still opens up that weekend, I should say, for individuals who want to attend a high school football game to do so, for the most part. But it's just arrogance. I just don't understand it. You know, at the end of the day, and many people have come out and have been very candid with their response to this initiative. One Big Ten assistant coach, we don't know, the name wasn't put in the article, but one Big Ten assistant coach said this, quote, "Friday night games will put the Big Ten in a recruiting disadvantage." He went on to say, "No other conference has the game day atmospheres of this league. Combined with two teams or whoever is playing would not have the opportunity of going to recruit on Friday nights as well as to watch prospects play." Another assistant said this, quote, "It kills us with recruiting." You know, it's a common theme here, right? Recruiting, common word. "It kills us with recruiting. One of the best things about our place is the game day environment. Those kids won't be able to experience that because they will all have their games." And then another assistant, not to be named in the article as well, added this, quote, "There is no advantage. Most, if not all, high school kids play on Friday nights, which means you would lose one game for recruiting." I think Jerry DiNardo does a great job on the Big Ten Network, but Jerry, I have to totally disagree with you, my man. I agree with these anonymous assistant coaches. Because when you talk about recruiting, recruiting is so big. It is the factor in how good your college program is. And when you are taking away one of those weekends for your assistant coaches to go out and to see a potential recruit, a potential big-time recruit, you are putting yourself at a disadvantage. While every other conference gets to go out there and have the luxury of going out on a Friday night and seeing those prospects and wooing those prospects. So from a recruiting standpoint, I can see how this just irks coaches in the Big Ten Conference. And then, you know, it tickled my fancy when I heard the other analyst on the Big Ten Network. I don't know his name, but he said, you know, it's only 6 weeks out the year. I mean, do you realize that in high school football, they only play 10 weeks? That's all you get. I mean, we were just raving and ranting about, you know, how I couldn't believe that the high school football season is already, the regular season is already kaput, and we're talking about the second week now of high school football playoffs. It goes so fast. So when you talk about 6 weeks that puts, you know, various teams at a recruiting disadvantage, you better believe that's going to have a ripple effect. But it's all about one thing, folks. And this just irks me. And this is why sports nowadays sometimes just turns the average fan totally off. It's all about the money. It's all about the Benjamins at the end of the day. I mean, this is coming in context of the conference's new TV contract, which begins next year. This is included in that package. Deciding to have Friday night games, they looked at the market and said, you know what? there's an opportunity here because when it comes to television, I mean, who is really having, I mean, not many teams are having Friday night games in college football broadcasted. This allows us to tap into a new avenue, possibly boost ratings, to increase the fandom of the Big Ten Conference. And you better believe, folks, I mean, let's just hypothetically speaking here, Michigan State played, you know, on a Friday night, right, in the conference season. I mean, you better believe that's going to take some fans out of the stands of respective high school games. You know, because there's a lot of season ticket holders that live in this area. And let's say East Lansing is playing on that same night. I mean, that's going to affect attendance for high schoolers. You better believe it is. We are forgetting quick. Far too often, we let the mighty dollar dictate how we attack scheduling in sports. And this is just a sad example of it. And if I'm a Big Ten coach, I am highly ticked off right now. And I really can't blame them. Really can't blame them. Folks, what do you think? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Right now, I want to get the thoughts and opinions of, but before we dive into this Michigan State and Illinois preview, I want to get the thoughts and opinions of our fantastic crew here at Current Sports. We've got a full house today. Not only, of course, is Isaac Constance, our engineer behind the glass, but we also have three PAs in the house in studio right now. We've got Griffin Wasik. We've got Zachary Swiecicki. And Zach Barnes. Zach, and Griffin. What's up, fellas? First off, how you doing? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Al.
I want to get your thoughts. I'm going to start left to right here. Because, Zach, when you heard that bite, actually, from the Big Ten Network with Jerry DiNardo giving his thoughts on it, and Jerry is praising, you know, the Big Ten Conference, saying, yeah, I mean, hey, brings in more revenue. I mean, this money trickles down to schools in the Big Ten financially. This makes sense. You immediately shook your head and said, I don't get it. Zach, what are your thoughts on this?
We're already seeing problems with the Pac-12 doing this. The Pac-12 has their Friday night games, and the ratings are terrible. I don't know what the recruiting side effects of it all is, but it hasn't been like a positive venture for them as all. And so how can the Big Ten see that with the Pac-12, see a poor example, and then say, hey, we're going to go do that as well? I mean, you hit it on the head with saying it's all about the money, which is sad. But it's just like, I don't know, I'm a traditionalist. It's Saturday mornings, you know, that noon game. It's meant for college football. And like you said, that atmosphere, you can't replicate that on a Friday night. It didn't happen at Furman. People are coming back from class, a lot of the students on Fridays, they have work, you know, things like that. It's not that Saturday morning, early tailgate kind of thing, you know, the beautiful Saturday morning. It's just not the kind of same feel you're trying to give those recruits.
It really is arrogance. You know, and I made this comment. You remember this, Isaac? When we covered... You know, during the good old days of Michigan State football, right, last year, on New Year's Eve, we're out, you know, at the home of my Cowboys, right?
Yep.
New Year's Eve, we're watching this blowout up in the press box. Michigan State got completely annihilated by Alabama. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, okay, I'm curious to who's tuned into this game right now. So I went on my Snapchat, and I see all of my friends that I went to college with who are diehard MSU football fans, they're completely tuned out. It was a blowout. They're completely tuned out, and they're going on about their New Year's Eve festivities, right? And for the most part, if you look at the ratings hurt. If you're not a diehard fan, hey, and even the diehard fans of MSU football in Alabama probably tuned out of that game.
Oh, yeah.
But if you aren't a diehard fan of Alabama and Michigan State, who cares about a New Year's Eve college football playoff game? Really. Unless you're a diehard fan of both teams or a diehard fan of college football in general. That is not. You're not going to let that interrupt your New Year's plans. Am I right here?
No, you're right. 100%. Yeah. On the New Year's Eve thing, you can't compete with a holiday like that, a spectacle. Yet on the Big Ten, I am going to disagree with you because I think this is a long-range goal for the conference. What I think it is, yes, it's talking about funding and that trickling down to the schools. What I think the bigger deal here is schools like Rutgers. Not that Rutgers should be in the conference in the first place, let's make that clear. But schools like Rutgers, Indiana, Northwestern, that usually wouldn't have Saturday games broadcasted just because of the competition. You know, if you got the chance to watch LSU versus Alabama, you're not going to watch the Northwestern Wildcats play. That's just the way it goes. These schools now get a night to themselves to display what they have. So while I don't think that it helps high school recruiting necessarily, what it does help with is the stature, the perception of the program that will feed into all of the recruiting tradition
and folklore I disagree,
that
Isaac.
You can dig into.
At the end of the day, if you wanna draw eyeballs to your program, you gotta do one thing. You gotta win.
But
simple
some
as that.
Schools just don't and have the resources
that,
to win.
But moving that game
that
to a
simple.
Friday isn't gonna help.
Yes, it
I don't
will. Because you'll
see
get
how
a little
helps.
Bit extra revenue by the TV
man.
Dollars. It's, but then people are that, will actually pay attention too. I know for me, sometimes if I'm
on
bored
a Friday
on the,
night.
If I'm bored on a Thursday or Friday night, if I'm doing nothing. I will turn
but
on.
You're
ESPN.
Not the average sports
yeah,
fan
yeah,
either.
Yeah, I'm talking about for the general population. Nobody's going to be glued to their television
no.
watching a Rutgers
no,
game on a Friday night.
No, they're not
going
to be glued to it, but just the name recognition will
no,
help
does.
These programs.
But, okay,
of course, it helps
have you
the
watched those Pac-12 games this
yes,
year?
Yes, I have.
Really?
Yeah.
Nobody tunes in. I'm yeah, not watching those Friday night
and
games.
Isaac
I know that.
Also isn't the average sports fan by, you know.
I agree. Let's let Griffin and Zach chime in right now. Swy, what do you think about this move?
Well, obviously, it's all about the money. Everything's about the money. But I love that Michigan State said, we'll do it if it's on Labor Day, because they've played the last six years, they've played on Friday of Labor Day weekend, mm-hmm. five of them at home, one in 2015 at Western Michigan. And
these are out of conference games,
they're,
right?
They're out of conference games. They don't matter. I mean, if they start playing them, as you said, it's all about the money and recruiting. If they're playing Ohio State, who obviously isn't going to want to do it on a Friday in October, they're going to miss out on recruiting. They're probably, mm-hmm. I think the ratings are going to go down. If it's a big game on a Friday, obviously you mentioned it's some part of the crowd's going to be at the high school games. A mm-hmm. lot of
because you're competing with that market,
exactly.
Now, you know, and high school football is big.
Yeah,
and let's just keep that real because I think there's a ripple effect in that regard too. I mean, you know, for those that want to see, you know, little Tommy play, you know, the little niece or nephew or you know their son. You know, play it at night. I mean, they're most likely going to be at that high school game as opposed to sitting on the couch or even at that respective college football game. I just don't see how this benefits anybody from solely a standpoint of the TV contract, with the new TV contract.
Al,
that's going
to
bring
you're
more
referring
money.
To, though, is the bigger name schools. Now, I understand that, but Michigan declined to participate in this. Ohio State.
I hear you.
You're
talking about the little guy.
Option.
I don't see
the
how this benefits
guys.
The little guy either.
Because they get the recognition. They get the attention
no
that they deserve.
No one's going to be tuning in like that. There's not going to be a significant.
Be.
There's
no.
not going to be a significant bump. In ratings by putting Rutgers on a Friday night, Isaac.
No, a nationally syndicated game will always get more ratings than something shown on the local TV station that doesn't cover anything else except public access township meetings. Of course that's going to boost the ratings and boost the national prestige of these programs.
I don't know. I think you're really grasping at straws in that argument, Isaac. Griffin?
All right, one thing that I noticed on the BTN press release and the quotes and everything with them explaining this deal, they don't want to go on Thursdays because of, obviously, Thursday night football in the NFL. They want to stay away with that market. But then, because they're competing with that. Mm-hmm. So on Friday, how aren't you competing with, like Zach said, the Pac-12 and the ACC game, all of high school football?
And I'm curious, how long is that Pac-12 contract agreement for? Do you know? And when did that start? I have to dive into that, too. I think it's a good point you bring in.
The Pac-12 is a mess just overall because their night games, too, are getting terrible ratings.
Right, certainly. Griffin, I'm sorry.
And I mean, the NFL all year, ratings are going down, down, down. So same with the Thursday night games. I don't see how Friday night games for the Big Ten, I mean, no one's going to want to go see and watch Rutgers, Northwestern. Mm-hmm. The whole recruiting aspect doesn't make sense. But I agree with Zach Swiececki about MSU having it on Labor Day weekend. I actually don't really mind that. It doesn't impact recruiting in any way here in the state of Michigan. Mm-hmm. But in other states, they don't necessarily do that. So it does hurt recruiting in states like Ohio and Indiana.
I agree with you, and that's the big thing. If I'm the head coach of one of these Big Ten teams, I'm saying to myself, are you kidding me? You know, I just don't understand the logic here. And again, at the end of the day, it's about money, and it's about overall arrogance that the NCAA and now the Big Ten is just kind of flexing his muscle, and they really think they can do anything. They think they can put a game maybe on Sunday, maybe even, and compete with NFL football, and they think it probably would work. You know, Isaac? I mean,
hey, they tried that with the USFL.
It's ridiculous.
Again, let me tell you.
I wouldn't be surprised, and mark my words on this, I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing Thursday night games. It's just going to keep getting bumped up, dude. Heck, we saw a Tuesday night.
We saw a Tuesday night game
with Western this week.
Action.
What? A Tuesday night Mac game? Come on, man. I mean, it makes no sense to me. NCAA just, it blows my mind. The arrogance sometimes that the NCAA has, it just blows my mind, Isaac.
It's definitely partially arrogance, but it is a chance
partially
for these,
arrogance?
It's a chance for these littler schools to get on ESPN, and that's the big name. That's the big deal.
Well, this is the Big Ten Network, far different from ESPN. But I hear
still nationally.
I hear you. Nationally televised game. I at the end of the day, though, this is going to be a failure. I think so.
Well, can we
so,
disagree?
The Friday
Let's check
night
on
slate.
In five, yeah, 5 years or whatever.
Yeah, the Friday night slate will include 3 non-conference games and 3 conference contests. And until now, the league has resisted to say that they will play on a Thursday. So the Big Ten right now has no plans to play on Thursday nights. That's coming from Senior Associate Commissioner Mark Rutner. That's what he told the Big Ten Network. But don't hold your breath, all right? Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will chat with Brooks Lambeer, scout for the Portland Timbers, and he will help us preview the Big Ten tournament game between Michigan State Soccer and Penn State. And we will also preview the Michigan State and Illinois college football game. That and more. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call if you want to be a part of today's show. In just a moment, we will be diving into the Michigan State and Illinois game. You know, it's really intriguing when you look at this matchup tomorrow for MSU and Illinois. I mean, I never thought in a million years that both Michigan State and Illinois would enter this game at identical 2-6 records. I mean, that's really fascinating to me. Of course, the Spartans fell to 0-5 in Big Ten play for the first time since the early 80s, 1982 to be exact, with last week's 32-23 home loss to rival Michigan, adding really more disappointment to an already trying season under head coach Mark D'Antonio after he took him to the college football playoff just months ago, all right? So I want to get your thoughts on that game. Call in. Give us a score prediction, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. On a lighter note, though, let's talk some football. That's right, soccer. The Michigan State soccer team will host its first ever Big Ten tournament game when they welcome the Penn State Nittany Lions to the Martin Stadium. Penn State is 8-7-2, 4-4-0 in the Big Ten, and has yet to win a game from Jeffrey Field, though, all year. That's right. Penn State went 0-5-1 on the road during the regular season. MSU 12-4-1, 4-3-1 in conference, and didn't lose a game at all at home. That's really remarkable stuff. So right now, we have a man who is going to be in attendance on Sunday afternoon to witness that Spartan and Nittany Lions matchup. Brooks Lambeer, Midwest Regional Scout for the Portland Timbers, now joins us here on Current Sports. Brooks, what's up, my man?
How's it going, Al?
Always good hearing from your brother. And, when I just riddled off those stats. You know, Michigan State, a team that hasn't lost all year at home. Penn State, a squad that has yet to win all year on the road. Home field advantage speaks volumes in a matchup like this. Does it not, Brooks?
Yeah, soccer's a tough game where it's very difficult to win one on the road. You see that the college ranks, the youth ranks, the professional ranks. It's going to say a lot about Penn State. They're a very good team at home. They played some good teams at home. But, yes, that the no wins away from home is very probably concerning if you're going into the game. But let's kind of look at it this way. Penn State's pretty much has to probably win the Big Ten tournament to make it to the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. So, if I'm on Penn State and I'm Bob Warming, you're kind of thinking, let's just take it one at a time. We'll throw all the records out from the regular season, and we just got to win these next 3 games and try to win the Big Ten tournament. So they've got that going for them. And then Michigan State, first time ever, never losing a game at home at the Martin Stadium. you know, it speaks volumes. Well, you know, kind of what we talked about in September, Al, is, you know, you said, you know, do they have a chance? And, you know, I told you top three, and, you know, they finished four. It could have been a little differently if they won Indiana. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this Michigan State team, you know, like I said, the four, two, three, one they're playing, it's working for them. You know, they're playing well. The fresh, you know, three guys in the all-freshman team with Wentugu, Pimlott, and Giuseppe Baroni, who is also Big Ten Freshman of the Year. You know, and you have Jimmy Fiskus, second team All-Big Ten, and then Ryan Ken Krolicki, second team All-Big Ten as well, and then Ryan Sierakowski, first team All-Big Ten. So this would be a pretty good game on Sunday.
Yeah, and I saw that release today, sophomore forward Ryan Sierakowski, as you just mentioned, Brooks, named to the first team All-Big Ten squad. I'm going to get to Ryan in just a second, but I want to talk about just the seeding between MSU and Penn State right now. PSU sitting at a 5 seed, MSU 4. Do you agree with how those two sit in the current bracket?
Yeah, you know, it's, at the end of the day, that's how the points kind of finished, you know. That's how soccer is. You know, there's no really discrepancies, you know, how many points you either get, you know, wherever you finish. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how it is. And honestly, you know, like I said before, top three for Michigan State, you know, Penn State was going to hover around. You know, Wisconsin's obviously up there as well. But, you know, it's going to be a good matchup, 4-5. You know, Penn State's going to play a 3-5-2, you know, when they're going offensively. Defensively, they'll probably switch to a 4-4-2. They'll kind of play a little wing back on the left side. You know, and Michigan State just has to really try to control the middle. That's going to be the big thing, because when going forward, you know, you have five guys in the middle of Penn State with a 3-5-2. So it's going to be an interesting matchup. Connor Maloney is always a dangerous guy around the box for Penn State. He can hit it from very far, 20, 25 yards away. I've seen him hit very great goals in the upper 90. Robbie Sagel, second team All-Big Ten. I would disagree with some of the coaches and say he was probably a first team All-Big Ten guy, but, you know, that's just how it is. Robbie Sagel, very good defender. Riley Grant, very good left central midfielder, going to cause problems for Michigan State. The question is, can he play a full 90 minutes, meaning can he stay involved in the game for 90 minutes? But, you know, Michigan State, like I said, with I think the biggest move, honestly, they made is, you know, Pimlott and Brad Satow in the middle. They've been clogging up the middle. The question is, they're kind of both play the same position numbers. They both play a number 6, a defensive midfielder. You know, there's really not a number 8. So, mm-hmm. You know, one of them really kind of has to take control and see who's going to spring a little more forward, because your number 8 in soccer is going to go a little further forward than your 6. Your 6 is really going to stay in front of your back 4. So, you know, this will be a very interesting game. And, you know, I think who scores first may end up being the winner in this game.
It's all about how, you know, the type of start you get off to. And, you know, it's something that, you know, that really stood out to me about Penn State's schedule this year, Brooks, and I think you will agree, is that, you know, this is a team that played in 8 overtime games this year, 5 of which went to double OT. What are the chances that this team is just kind of mentally worn out after playing that many extra sessions throughout a year, playing a solid MSU squad on the road? I mean, does that add up at during this time of the year in the postseason?
Yeah, you know, it adds up. You know, what was it, a couple years ago, I think we talked about this, when Michigan State had a bunch of those overtime games, you know, the years they went to the Elite Eight. And, you know, they tend to wear on you, the double overtime games or the overtime games, just because it's an extra 10 to 20 minutes you got to play. So, you know, then you're worried about your legs. You're already playing 2 to 3 games a week, mm-hmm. which is not very conducive to what the professional game plays. You know, there may be 2 games a week sometimes, so you're playing 1 a week. So,
right,
you know,
right.
Try to recover after playing a full 120 minutes, then go play another 90, you know, 2 days later. So, you know, that's not a lot of time to recover. So has it taken a toll on Penn State? Sure it has. But, you know, they've gotten some time to rest. I expect Bob Worming's team to be ready to go. And, you know, it's going to be a new game. Like I said, you know, everything, you know, fill the records out from what it was for some of the teams in the regular season, because, you know, at this point, Penn State has to win the Big Ten championship to make it to the NCAA tournament.
Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKER's Current Sports, we are chatting with Midwest Regional Scout for the Portland Timbers, the great Brooks Lambeer. Now, Brooks, the two played in East Lansing at Jeffrey Field on October 15th. And that match is another game that could not be resolved in regulation. Penn State actually won that in overtime. How indicative do you think that matchup is when breaking down what is going to take place possibly this Sunday?
Well, I think it's for a good message for Michigan State. Let's not get to overtime with Penn State because look what they did at home, you know, against us. So, you know, and I really agree with that. You know, Michigan State struggles to score offensively. I mean, Sierkowski's been good. When DeJuan's been playing, he's been good. You know, it's just been it's funny how it changed. You know, things can change with 2 years. You know, Michigan State was a great team on set pieces. There are a lot of set piece goals off corner kicks and free kicks. And then it's kind of dropped off the past couple of years. You know, you lose a couple guys like Kreutz and Montague and Cope and Keener and all those guys that are really good in the air and Zach Carroll. And, you know, things change and you have to adjust. And, you know, Damon's trying to bring those players in to get back, you know, to be a little more balanced offensively and on set pieces. But, you know, I'd say it's very indicative. You know, I'm worried if Michigan State gets into overtime with Penn State that the game is really up for grabs, and it could be, honestly, in Penn State's favor.
All right, Brooks, what are the keys to the game for Michigan State if they want to pull out this?
Keys to the game. Jimmy Haig needs to be on his game. You know, he has been for a majority of the season. Jimmy Haig, second team, all Big Ten goalkeeper, well-deserved. You know, the spine of the defense, what we call it, the two center backs, the guys in front of them, and then going up on the number 10 position with Baroni and Sierkowski, they're going to have to play well. They have to control the midfield. You know, because most of the in soccer, most of the time a game is won whoever controls the midfield. It's not always, you know, the team with the most possession always wins, but you cannot control the midfield. That dictates dictate the tempo of the game. That'll be really helpful for them.
Mm-hmm.
Big players step up. I'm going to say Michael Pimlott, the freshman, big time. He's got to step up. Michael Wentugu has to be solid. Maybe, you know, Giuseppe Baroni can get in there. He loves to sit behind. He loves to sit right in front of Ryan Sierkowski or right behind him. If you're going offensively, I like to see him drop more in the midfield, try to collect the ball there. He's a very creative player. Great flicking the ball on. I'd like to see him do a little more. Ken Krolicki needs to be a little more solid in the midfield. He's been kind of giving the ball away a little cheaply. So, you know, it's all about possession in soccer. And, you know, I said, you know, team with the most possession doesn't always win, but usually you have a pretty good chance if you have the ball for most of the game. So possess the ball. Hopefully maybe get a set-piece goal here, or maybe Ryan can, you know, hit one in from inside the 18.
And speaking of Sierkowski, the sophomore forward, he was named to first-team All-Big Ten squad, as you mentioned earlier, Brooks. Michigan State has had at least one first-team selection every season since 1999. Last year was defender Zach Carroll, the lone Spartan on the first-team list. Overall, Sierkowski, the 34th MSU player to earn first-team honors. In what way have you seen Sierkowski's game transform the way MSU plays?
You know, I think at the beginning of last season, Ryan was a very big goal scorer at the academy level. And yes, you play in the highest level of youth soccer, and yes, some of the players you play against may go play overseas or may go play for ACC teams. But listen, when you're stepping up to the next level, you have to learn to adjust. It took Ryan a little bit of time to adjust in his freshman season. You saw it towards the middle and the end, he caught on. You know, this summer he goes away and plays with Bridges. They go over to Scandinavia. You know, they go play some teams. You know, he probably learns a little from that. Coming back, you know, he's got the mindset of a striker to, you know, you got to kind of forget what happened at the beginning of last season. And, you know, he's doing what he's doing. He's dropping down the midfield, which is creating space for other teammates to run in behind. He's very smart off the ball. He's probably one of the best players, I would say, in the Big Ten and for most of the teams I've seen, where his off-the-ball runs help create space for other players, which is huge because, I mean, you got to learn how to be able to run off the ball. So, you know, and his finishing is great. We all know he can finish well. You know, Ryan's just really improved his game. I mean, there's no if, and, or but about it. He's just become a smarter player, and I hope to see him develop more as he goes into this program in his junior and senior year.
Yes, he is definitely a fun player to watch, for sure, Brooks. All right, well, we're going to put you on the spot before we get you out of here, Brooks. Well, give us a score prediction.
Score, let's see here. You know, I think Michigan State's got the momentum here. They're playing at home. They're very comfortable. I'll say this game goes 2-1 Michigan State. I'll say maybe Michigan State scores first, Penn State ties it up, and then, you know, eventually Michigan State finds that late goal in the second half.
Okay. Brooks Lambeer, again, scout for the Portland Timbers. Brooks, would you mind joining us sometime next week to preview as, you know, if MSU moves forward in the tournament, as well as other postseason implications for the Spartans next week?
Oh, for sure. Anytime, man. I'm always happy to talk about Big Ten soccer and our NCAA soccer, man.
Love it. Brooks Lambeer. Brooks, thanks so much.
Thank you, Al. You have a good day.
You got it. Have a great weekend, my friend.
Thank you.
Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on today's current sports by previewing the Michigan State and Illinois college football game. We also have a feature from our very own Kevin Lavery, who talks about the new turf being installed at Cooley Law School Stadium. We'll be right back. All right, folks, I really hope you got your phones in hand right now, because right now, in the last 15 minutes of the show, we are going to give away a pair of tickets to check out the MSU women's basketball team as they open up the exhibition year on Sunday. First caller to call in and give me the answer to this question will win those tickets, all right? Can you name me the name of the MSU women's basketball player who got drafted in the first round of the WNBA draft last season? That's a gimme. That's a layup, right? That is easy. Easy. Give me the name of that player as well as what pick she was. She was the highest draft pick in program history, okay? Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. There's still euphoria in the air after the Chicago Cubs' dramatic World Series victory Wednesday night. While the big leagues and the minors may be done for the season, preparations continue for next year. Here in Lansing, the boys of summer will have a fresh new field awaiting them next spring. Current State's Kevin Lavery actually took a trip out to Cooley Law School Stadium, and the Lugnuts are so pumped about their next season, they're already rolling out the red carpet. Except this one is actually green. There's a new layer of sod now covering the field, which should be completely finished later on today. Kevin got a chance to talk with Lugnuts GM Nick Greaser about the project at the stadium as they were serenaded by the sound of diesel engines and mechanical beeping.
We are doing pretty much a complete transformation and replacement of our playing surface. Everything from, obviously, as you can see behind me, all of the sod is being replaced. In addition to that, we're re-leveling the infield, we're replacing the warning track, we're upgrading our irrigation, we're adding new drains where needed. We're getting a state-of-the-art, brand-new playing surface that we haven't done in about 11 years. So it's been time to replace it, and what you're seeing now will be our brand-new playing surface come opening day next year.
Is a decade roughly the wear and tear shelf life of a baseball field?
Yeah, it is. Obviously, how you maintain it and care for it over that time makes a big difference in that. We've done a pretty good job over the years. So, yeah, it's about the normal shelf life. Obviously, the major leagues do it a little bit more regularly than what the minor leagues do. But, yeah, it was certainly needed. I would say slightly overdue. But that's the reality of a minor league baseball park, is that you deal with the elements that you have. And so we've had a great field. We've always had a great field. And this will just add to it.
So this is early November, Nick. Your season ended about a month ago with the Crosstown Showdown. But in the interim, you were using the field for something out of the ordinary, something unusual, I think.
Yeah, we had a couple of events after the season was over. I think you're referring to our mini golf at the ballpark. And we did that because it is a once-in-a-10-year opportunity. You can't really do that on a playing field that you're going to open up for a baseball season the next year. So we took the opportunity, had some fun with it. Our timing was a little pushed out, I guess you could say. We should have been installing this a few weeks ago, but we might have done our mini golf a little bit longer. But yeah, we did 5 days of it. We had over 1,500 fans come out and play, which exceeded our expectations. So we just took the opportunity to utilize the ballpark in a new way and figured, why not? Our groundskeeper kind of used all the baseball elements we had around. He had some ideas on how to map it out and draw it up, and I think it offered a good benefit for a lot of our fans in the area that they could come out and play mini golf on a professional baseball field.
What's the advantage of real sod versus AstroTurf? That's a brand name. Is that word even used anymore in the industry?
Not much, but you know, the synthetic surfaces. Yeah, the you know, real sod. For one, I just like the looks of it. I'm a baseball purist. To me, it's not a, you know, even though we're a Toronto affiliate and they've got synthetic. To me, the natural sod is the way to go. And we actually consulted with our friends at the Blue Jays, and they preferred. Even though they don't have natural grass, they preferred to have a natural grass field for their guys' learning abilities. So the ball definitely plays different. You don't get the crazy hops, you don't get the crazy bounces. You know, it's a little bit more true. But more than none, I think it's the aesthetics of it. I just like a natural grass. I think most fans, when they come to a ballpark, especially in baseball, like the natural field. You know, it's not as durable. I'd be lying if I said that I wouldn't mind the durability of going the other route. You know, things like concerts and different events that you do, you really don't have to worry about damaging it. But in my mind, that's a sacrifice that's well worth it. Yeah, we're excited about it. I mean, you know, one thing to add to this, too, is that, you know, we've hired professionals to do this. The company that's installed it is Busch Turf. They just came out of the Brewers Stadium and installed new Milwaukee's. Actually, our sod that they're installing right now came from the same sod farm and actually was cut right next to the new Chicago Cubs field that they're installing in a couple of weeks. So we have a major league caliber field that's going in right now, which we're extremely excited about it. And, you know, the average fan, they come into the ballpark and they look at the grass and they say, oh, yeah, it looks awesome. But when you really dive into it, and if you put a before and after photo next to each other, I think the fans are really going to be impressed by it. And, you know, the caliber of baseball that we have and you know, that we accommodate for our team, they're really going to notice the difference as far as the playability of the field. So we're extremely excited about it. It's a fun process.
We're talking with Nick Greaser, the general manager of the Lansing Lugnuts. Now, the contractor, Nick, is from St. Louis. The sod comes from Wisconsin. Now, all the MSU folks are saying, hey, we're like the turf grass research capital of the known world. What's up with that?
Sure. Michigan State's been very involved. We obviously work with them. Our last three or four groundskeepers have come from their turf program. We were working with them to get some sod from them, and really the seasons in Michigan, and they're a research center. They're not a turf farm. So we certainly worked back and forth with them, but it ended up making more sense to go with the guys that do this for a living every single day. And then we're utilizing Michigan State resources as far as, you know, helping us, how do we maintain it, cultural practices, those things. We actually had one of the turf programs out here this morning kind of watching them install it so they could get that firsthand experience. So while it didn't come from Michigan State, we're certainly involved with them, and we work very closely with them on utilizing their resources.
Now, I realize you have to upgrade. You have to make things safer, bigger, and better. You have to improve things. You may have noticed over the years, though, Nick, that baseball players are pretty superstitious. They don't like a lot of change. They like routine. Is there anything to be said about the first time that your Lugnuts walk on this new field?
It'll be a welcome change. This is one thing that I think any ball player would prefer, to have a brand new playing surface, than anything superstitious. And, you know, the way that minor leagues work, most of our guys are going to, you know, we're not going to have the same crew that coming back. So I'm not worried about that whatsoever. I think they'll welcome the change purely from the playing surface aesthetics alone. Things that they're noticing that the average fan doesn't notice, how the ball plays, you know, some of the compaction and some of the hard areas in the field from just, you know, from being an older field. So they'll certainly welcome that change. There's no issues with superstition on that one, I don't think.
Now, you and I were talking on Thursday afternoon, and it looks like, I'm going to guess, about 75 to 80% of this is finished all around the actual diamond itself, and a little bit toward the edges still needs to be put in.
Yeah, the sod will be completed probably by about this time tomorrow. And then the last couple steps, as you can see from the rain yesterday, we have some puddles on the infield. So they're going to come back in and level the infield. You shouldn't see those puddles regardless of the type of rain. So that's the second to last step. They'll come in, they'll get rid of all the lips where the sod meets the dirt. They'll level all that out, so we'll have a whole new infield as well. Then the very last step is coming in and replacing the warning track. So again, you can see how there's puddles along the warning track from the rain that we got yesterday. That'll all be replaced. We replaced the outfield portion of the warning track 2 years ago, so pretty much from foul pole to foul pole will all be redone. Then our groundskeeper will come in, rebuild our mound, our bullpen mounds, rebuild the game mound. But that'll all be done before next spring, so he might wait and do that in March when the weather breaks, hopefully.
Is your groundskeeper here, Lenny, I understand?
He is. He's floating around here somewhere. We were trying to get him to come up to answer a few more of the scientific questions, but I think he's got his hands full right now.
He's getting back to the land here.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, we're looking right at Ballpark Village and its multicolored platform, and this past season was the first season that was brand new. What's been the reception from people who live there, from people who come to the ballpark, about having that accessibility right there?
Sure, it's been very well received. You know, they've been sold out, I think, since the time that they opened, and it's been a very positive response. We've learned how to live with one another, and you know, make sure that they have some amenities that they have available in the ballpark, and you know, how do we kind of co-mingle, because we operate the first floor of that building. So it's been a really good experience. Not only kind of the talk about around the nation, we won some national economic development awards. We brought urban living downtown, helped to bring more urban living downtown, and I think it makes the ballpark feel like a major league park. That's the selfish part of me speaking, but it really, as you walk in, you know, a lot of minor league parks don't have anything past the foul poles except for some grass areas, maybe a couple venues here or there, but you walk into this place now, and even with only about 7,000 seats, it really has that major league feel to it. So it's exceeded my expectations. It's been a great project. It's been a really cool thing for the city of Lansing, as well as for the ballpark. It's kind of re-energized us in our 21st year. So we couldn't be happier.
Are you happy with the attendance levels as of late?
Hey, I'm a perfectionist, so I'd always like to be better. We had a rough April and May this past season, but we've got a great promotional schedule for next year, and we anticipate, our numbers are still been great. You know, our first year projection in 1996 was 250,000. We drew 320,000 in year 21 last year. So while you come to the ballpark on a Monday night, it's going to be fairly slow. Our bread and butter is still in the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights. And that's really where we impact our attendance. And unfortunately, sometimes weather does have something to do with that. But if we get a mild spring next year, and with our promotional schedule coming up, I think we'll have a great season again.
Thanks so much to Kevin for that feature. Very cool stuff. You know, I actually got a chance to chat with the heads groundskeepers, Lenny, that you heard alluded to in that piece. And Lenny does a great job. Really looking forward to seeing the new turf at Cooley Law School Stadium for next season. All right, MSU and Illinois will get it on like Donkey Kong tomorrow afternoon. Michigan State, losers of six straight games. You know, and you look at this Illinois team. You know, Lovie Smith still doesn't know who his quarterback is going to be against the Spartans. Jeff George Jr. has started the last two after Chase Crouch was injured. So, offense, Michigan State has the advantage, I think. Both teams have QB issues. Tyler O'Connor will probably start with Brian Lewerke out now. But Scott gives the Spartans the edge, in my opinion, on defense. Illinois and Michigan State rank 11th and 12th in the Big Ten, respectively, in average yards allowed per play. I'm going with MSU to stop the bleeding here. Finally, I'll say 21-17. Isaac?
Yeah, I think getting the Michigan game out of the way was very much getting a frog out of their throat. I think that relieved a lot of the pressure. Tyler O'Connor now named the starter as well. I think that's the right move. I think MSU wins this one as well, and I think they've got a good shot, 24-14.
ZB?
Oh, gosh. I mean, why do you make me do this? I don't know. 21-10 MSU. All I got to say is if they do lose, which they very well can, heads need to roll. Someone needs to get fired.
You think so?
Yes, absolutely. You lose to Illinois, sorry. Somebody's got to get fired.
Who is it? Really quickly, who?
One of the coordinators. Why are there two offensive coordinators and two defensive coordinators? What is this system?
I knew it was coming.
That's fair.
Zach?
I agree with you. I think they end the bleeding. They're favored by 7.5 MSU. I think they cover that. This team really turned around last week. Lost because of coaching. If they lose again because of coaching, I agree with Zach.
Dave Warner should have been fired weeks ago, in my opinion, and I'm going to go 24-21 MSU.
Strong words. I disagree with that, but okay, I hear you, Griffin. All right, well, we are out of time. Ladies and gents, boys and girls, we hope that you have a fantastic weekend. One Reflection Friday. Your pals, man. Your pals.
Again? What?
They got to get it together, Isaac. They got to get it together. Also, I think the Lions beat the Vikings this weekend, all right? Thanks so much. We'll be back at it same time, same place on Monday. Be easy, people.